even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Hi, I'm Sarah Smith. If you're the type of person that goes to Liberty as other people would go on safari, and the fact that John Lewis doesn't have a funeral service makes you fret, Sarah Smith cleaning cloths are for you. Sarah Smith, available from Sainsbury's, for the posher washer. Proud sponsors of Dumpty Dum.
Two momentous happenings this week. We will be covering Sunday's long episode of 12 Angry Men. Sorry, 11 jurors in Portsmouth. And the verdict. So if you haven't heard it, listen away now. Because this is Dum-de-dum, the show about the reality docudrama that is set at Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I am the 12 good men true, that is Royfield Brown. And with me I have the UKIP juror, that is
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of our trial of the century, folks, is you. Now, today's Dum-de-dum is a suitably apt one from Kool and the Gang.
Yay!
It's a band I actually hated back in the day, and still, I haven't got much love for them. Naff. And you had a proper naff jerry curl, as I seem to remember. But those people now to get a party started. So we start in with them. Now, Lucy.
Yep.
If anyone wants to send us a Dum-de-dum, how can they do that?
If you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum, give us a plot prediction, or talk all the way through a court scene, then ring us on 0203-3105 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thanks to Cosmo for his podcast roundups, to Sarah Smith for sponsoring us, and to Derek from Alone in the Back Bedroom. Derek is delighted at the verdict. He says if it just makes one other man think twice before asking for real custard, then it's all been worth it.
Real custard's overrated. But anyway, on this week's episode, we have calls from
Tishan. Yes. It's quicker to say you didn't ring in. Just everyone.
Yeah. Tishan 73, who won silence in court. Ilanthi Rosa, who thinks that Pat's due a U-turn. Dusty Substances, who wants Rob dead. Cue up there, Dusty. Jojo Sexy Hills, who's cheering Nigel. New York Nigel, who thinks it's all been over-egged. Kat Brown, who's having a hot attack. Good heavens, I hope not. Claire, who's ecstatic. Yokel Bear, whose nerves has been racked. Auntie Jean, who's gloating. Nozilla, whose heart has been broken. Midmi City, whose eyebrows are raised. Jackie, who thinks Charlie's on his way. Witherspoon, who gives actors applause. Sarah Brown, who's been shushing. Steve, who has ears like a lynx. Lady Garth Garth, who's had it with Shula. Join the back of a very long clue there, Lady Garth Garth. Goddess Diva, who's overtired and overexcited, and thank God for those three little letters, A-N-D, and Olivia Ellery, who's wrecked the porridge. But first, before all of that, let's have Lucy V. Freeman's Week in Ambridge.
It's been a quiet week in Ambridge. probably. We don't know because we weren't there, and neither was anyone else. We were all in Borsetshire, in a courtroom with the strangest acoustics known to man. Titchy Knob propelled himself into the witness box in his electric wheelchair, wincing and moaning, wrapped from head to foot in plaster of Paris like the Invisible Man, and proceeded to give the dodgiest statements to a court anyone has ever heard since. I did not have sexual relations with that woman. He said sir a lot, swore on the Bible, and generally did his best impression of a pillock of the community. However, on the pillock front, he was completely overshadowed by his own father, Bruce, who burst out of his straitjacket and started shouting the middle class equivalent of things ain't what they used to be, and if you love a lady, you hit her. Luckily, lucky old Shula had to sit next to him while he frothed away like an out-of-control latte machine. And quite frankly, I did my best to summon up some sympathy for her, but I couldn't find a shred of it, the silly moo. Tony huffed and puffed from the gallery, but spent most of his time trying to control his son and his friends, who seemed to treat it like an evening out at the pantomime. Fallon bought sandwiches, set the security beepers off, but that's what happened if you go through a scanner wearing an upcycled suit of armour, and whispered a running commentary. Tom ate his popcorn with his feet up on the seat in front, while Tony tried to stop Johnny running up and down the aisle. Isn't attempted manslaughter brilliant? Jess did a marvellous turn as wife numero uno, warming up in the wings in a silk dressing gown and shadow boxing while Pat held her back. She had her go, and then she had to move over so the poached salmon and the tuna bake could give evidence. They were great. They bloody ate it. Obviously, he's done nothing but slag them off for 2 years. The custard was a bit nervous, but it was still better than Pat. Krusty popped up and gave a barnstorming appearance, which almost made Tom knock his Fanta over, and Jill dropped several stitches at the poncho she's working on. Poor old Peggy's hand was a blur as it crossed bits out of her will and wrote them back in again. The current status is that Henry's getting the woolly inheritance, Fat Paul's getting the good china, and the lodge's going to Otto. Then we spent an hour with the biggest collection of lunatics, right-wing nutjobs and cretins assembled in one room since Celebrity Big Brother. The jury drama, which was less 12 angry men and more 11 bewildered actors, required everyone to have a signifier so we knew what they represented. Nigel Havers was charming but evil smoothie. Nigel Pargiter, back from his triple salco off the roof, appeared as Mr. Brexit to represent what happens when a group of people make a bloody stupid decision. Catherine Tate was bad working class woman as opposed to good working class woman, which is the Honourable Kaz Cockney Sparrow Nagor Blimey. There was a Muslim lady, and we know that because someone said they liked her headscarf within the first 10 minutes. I was longing for her to say, no, I'm not Muslim, I've just got curlers in. Eileen Atkins represented liberal feminism and let us know that by referencing hash brownies for no particular reason. There was the sensitive gay man, the macho flirter, etc. It was clunkier than the first attempts of a year four pottery class, but I bloody loved it. It was the funniest thing I've heard for ages. And then the verdict. Within the space of 2 minutes, the jury, apparently, and in total silence, swung from being completely anti-Helen to wanting to come after Rob with cudgels. The verdict was announced. I burst into tears. And then we all roared with fury when bloody Rob popped up again. But then would the accused and the victim be ambling round the courtrooms by themselves after such a stressful thing? Would there not be, I don't know, forms or something? Maybe. Anyway. Shula stopped lashing herself with nettle leaves. Tom put the lid back on his fizzy Ribena and Jill put her knitting back in her bag. It was all ridiculous, but I care not a jot because Helen is, if not exactly free, at least no longer afraid and no longer pretending. And for this relief, much thanks. The end.
Oh, well done. That's quite poignant and very clever this week. Well done.
Do you know what? It got to about Thursday and I was thinking, what the f*** am I going to write? It wasn't very funny.
You managed to see the comedic side in it, so I applaud you. I'm going to do this quite a lot.
That last jury bit was that. That gave me all the gags I needed, I tell you. That was so funny.
Well, all right. So, Freeman, how are we going to do this mammoth epic of a gigantuum show?
I think we should whiz through... Mm-hmm. I think we should go through the course straight away.
Should you do them on 1.5 speed?
No.
Right.
Because that would make me even more incomprehensible. I think we should go through the calls and then rant at will during the calls, should it be required at any point.
Okay. All right.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Titian 73 we have first.
Aye. Hello, Titian 73 here. After a few months' silence, I know you have lots of calls, so I'll be very quick. I want to say, stop whispering. Shut up, Pat. Well done, Helen. Bloody well done. And I'm afraid I've turned into Linda Snell because I've just hand-delivered 100 letters to local residents to complain about a planning application from an evil developer. Oh my God, I'm getting old. See you soon. Bye.
There was a lot of whispering. There was. I know they had to do it, but it was especially Fallon. I was thinking, you're going to get chucked out for contempt of court if you can't keep quiet. Just behave.
Mm.
Have you never been anywhere formal before? Shut up. Anyway.
To set the temperature of the proceedings, I suppose part of that was needed, but it did seem somewhat gratuitous.
Yes.
And key bits of testimony, as far as I was concerned, were missed to give us, you know, room temperature utterings from various kind of Archers members from Bridge Farm. And yeah, it did become wearing, but as a plot device, I suppose you understand the reason why it was done. But yeah, we did want to just focus on actually what was said.
Yeah, Titian 73, by the way, you're not alone. I always think I'm Linda Snell whenever I do anything remotely community minded. I think, oh God, I'm Snelling again. So no, yes, I don't think you're alone. You're alone in that. Right. Iolanthe Rosa.
Mm. She's in Britain at the moment.
Is she?
Yep. She should be up in the Lake District.
As
we podcast. Yes.
Wow, it's got a nice week for it.
Mm.
Hello, Dumpty Dummers. This is Robin in beautiful Santa Rosa, California. I'm Iolanthe Rosa on Twitter. And I'm completely absorbed by the trial proceedings, like I'm sure everybody else is. I'm finding it so moving and so compelling. And I'm feeling some optimism for the first time that maybe there will be a satisfying ending for this horrible storyline. I'm actually calling to talk about Pat. I've been just as frustrated as every other right-thinking Archers fan about her change of personality over the last couple of years, how she went from being a strong, opinionated feminist into being completely oblivious and a doormat towards Rob and let go of all of her native ability to read people and recognize him for what he was. But thinking about it this week, and as she's been hand-wringing and feeling guilty, carrying on in her currently self-absorbed way, I think in the end this is actually going to be a good thing for her relationship with Helen, because they'll be able to bond over the fact that they were both duped by this horrible man. I think it would be hard if Pat had been banging the anti-Rob drum all along and putting Helen now in a position where Helen would have to be saying or thinking that Pat was saying, I told you so, you know, you should have known. I think their relationship will be smoother with Pat just being another victim of Rob. And now Pat can take up this opportunity to snap back into her old shape and become strong again for Helen to make up for her loss of herself over the last couple of years.
Yes, Pat due a U-turn. I actually think that the relationship with Pat and Helen will improve now because the situation's reversed. Pat's protected Helen for so long and made her, in a way, I'm not trying to blame Pat in the slightest, but there is an element of Pat that's always been overly protective of Helen, or very, very protective and wary of Helen. And she's now seen how tough she is. And Pat's been the weak one. So I think that will kind of reverse slightly. And Pat will now see Helen as a very, very strong woman and treat her accordingly, rather than, are you sure, Helen? Are you sure? You know.
Mm. I hope so. Though you could take a contrary view and say that when Pat's taken her eye off Helen, then look what's happened.
Mm.
You know, when she entrusted somebody else to have Helen's best interests at heart, he absolutely abused her. And Pat's first...
Yeah, but that was... Yeah, sorry.
You know, and Pat's first instincts when she met Rob were to go, not sure about you. But she went, you know what? I trust my daughter. I hope that you're right and I'm wrong. And I'm not saying necessarily that I'm right in this. I'm just saying there is a contrary view. And because of the great community of Dum De Dum listeners, it was Andrew Horn that many, many, many podcasts ago didn't remind me because I didn't know this at all, but told us of Helen's traumatic birth. And that is the reason why Pat has, you know, forever kind of wrapped her in, you know, kind of cotton wool, etc., etc. But I hope you're right. I hope you're right. And because we need to move away from the Helen Archer show. And it has been compelling, but we do need to move away from it. So as soon as we can have some kind of normalcy between the Bridge Farm Archers, you know, all the better, all the better. Now, I'm going to, Freeman, applaud Sean O'Connor's tenure at the helm because he has brought the Archers in clearly into the social media age with issues and nods and winks to Twitter. So I know many people will be shocked about this, but I don't do this very often, but I'm standing up and I'm applauding. Because, you know, he has taken Helen, you know, that character, and moulded his whole run on the show around her. And it's garnered massive amounts of press. You know, we have to admit that.
Yeah.
And being a fan of the Archers is no longer a thing of social embarrassment and scorn. So we've got to give the guy credit for that. Now, Juicy Loose.
Yes.
You and I know that Mr. O'Connor didn't want the actors to appear on this podcast. Something which you had a bit of a... Your head exploded once, didn't it? You went, right. And I must admit, I found it, you know, we both found it incredibly baffling because Dum De Dum, you know, at Dum De Dum, we are friends, though sometimes critical friends, but we are friends of the show. And I think, you know, we, not just us, but Archer's fans from way back have been friends and fans who listen through thick and thin. And dare I say it, were the last bastion of defenders of this thing when it was incredibly unhip to admit that anyone listened to our favourite docudrama. You know, everyone's jumping on the bandwagon now. The New York Times is writing articles. You know, I get random calls from AP journalists in the middle of the night in California to say, oh, give me a quote. And we have to applaud the guy. So again, Mr. O'Connor, because I know you don't listen, but I know people who you do know do listen. Here is another clap. So it's with that in mind, Juicy Loose, that we are inviting the BBC publicity department to lift its ban on actors appearing on our show. Now, if you, good listener, agree, you can email radio4publicity@bbc.co.uk and remind them that the Dum De Dum community are 30,000 people strong and we haven't done 120.
30? I thought it was 25.
It's gone up, Loose.
Blimey.
Gone up. Dare I say it? A bit of a courtroom drama and press all over the place adds even to our kind of download figures. So, you know, we haven't done 120 odd shows on Ambridge to demean the show at all. We love it and we believe that the actors would enjoy being on the show again, just as Joanna Van Kampen, Tim Bentinck and Terry Molloy all have in the past. Now, Lucy.
Yes.
This storyline, I'm going to start in reverse. Sean O'Connor and I have two things in common. A love of the Archers and the film 12 Angry Men, which you have very cleverly put into your monologue and stuff. Now, the parallels between last night's episode and that classic black and white movie were not an accident. And this is how much, purely on a personal note, when I first saw that film, it so knocked me sideways as a, 12-year-old that I decided, actually, I wanted to make films. I wanted to be in the media. I couldn't understand. I was totally blown away by the fact that you could have one drama, primarily in one room. So it almost feels like a play and be taken on an utter roller coaster. So I have to applaud his homage to that film, because that film means a lot to me. It reminds me of being 12, 13, lying on the carpet floor, arm around my mum, watching Henry Fonda do his shtick. And the beats and the plot twists of that film were mirrored in yesterday's episode. So well done there, Mr. O'Connor. Bravo. Now, without wanting to get into all this plot about stabbing again, because I just repeat myself week after week, I believe that as soon as Ambridge can move away from Rob Titchener, the better. This is not to take anything away from the sterling performances of Timothy Watson. But as great as the storyline has been, the whole dynamic of the village has been upset by this overbearing storyline for the last 2.5 years. Many beloved characters and storylines, Luce, have been neglected. Lucy, where the hell is this bunting, for example? Seriously, where is it?
Why bring... It's like a family row. You think, why bring that up? If you weren't going to say, if you weren't going to sort of look for it properly or talk, mention it again, why bring it up in the first place? That's, yeah,
debunking. This new editor needs to deal with a myriad of storylines of Rob's.
Can we drop in Dusty Substance's call here? Because she's
No. Oh, I'm just getting it done. Then I'm going to shut the heck up, right?
Okay.
Now, this new editor is going to have to deal with all of the fallout of Rob and his nefarious goings-on, which will all now come to light. And the protracted custody wranglings over Henry, instead of getting on with new storylines and characters. As I've said before, the birth of Henry heralded the start of the Helen Archer show. All I ask is, can we have the return of Ambridge and the Archers, please, now? That's it. There's my little rant and plea over BBC publicity. Please, can we just move on? Mr. Sean O'Connor, you did great things for the show that I love, we love, you love it also. But can we now have a turning of the leaf, not only with new storylines, but also with the way of which we've been dealt with, because we absolutely adore this thing, and you know that we do. And there's no need for us to be put in the naughty corner any longer.
I'm perennially on the naughty step. I am. It's become moulded to my bottom. Anyway, Dusty Substances, call.
Hello, it's Dusty Substances here, the wrong sort of listener, and definitely out on a limb today. I heard the trial last night, and I heard Sean O'Connor on the Today programme this morning. It's Monday. I'm not euphoric. As Sean O'Connor says, this isn't the end. He's almost promised us 30 more years of this, potentially. And that's not a euphoric thought. All along I've said it's been well acted, well written, well intentioned. The fundraising has been fantastic. I still think all of those things. But the Archers' main purpose isn't to educate us on social issues. It's not main purpose. It's not a Hollywood blockbuster on an epic scale where big storylines can rumble and then disappear. And it's not like Dallas where you can have a shower and you can turn the clock back and not be dead. It's a tiny 15-minute, sometimes claustrophobic space in my head and in a lot of people's heads. That could be from anywhere the storyline actually really worked. But for me, it just destroyed the whole balance of the series. No scene was safe from Rob. From the final exchanges with Helen last night, no scene will be safe from Rob in future. So the balance for me is really, really thrown. But I want to be positive, so here is my little plan of what would make me a very positive listener. I'd like Rob to be shunned by the village now, even by Susan. I'd like him to lose custody of Henry. I'd like Justin to think again about that job. I'd like Charlotte to run away very fast. I'd like Stefan to turn up, either alive, well and ready to blab, or in a culvert. I'd like Rob to be publicly unhinged and then to die dramatically of an unexpected complication. And then, friends, I promise I will be as euphoric as humanly possible. Bye for now.
She is not euphoric. This is not the end. Now, various doomers and gloomers amongst us. And I'm sure Dusty won't mind me referring to her as a doomer and a gloomer, because she is, bless her, you know, she's just completely fed up with it all. Is he going to appeal? Is there going to be now a rape case? Who gets custody of Henry? He is allegedly still starting his job at Barrow, but another caller says, no, he ain't. He's not going to leave the village, is he? Because his boys are there, as he would think of them. And, I think his campaign now will be that all that weirdo nonsense last night about, I still can't take my eyes off you, was him saying, I'm now going to see if I can, after all that, I'm now going to see if I've got the power to pull you back in again. You know, he's not going to go. People like him don't give up. Because they don't believe, they don't understand, they don't have the capacity to understand that some things are beyond their power. They just don't believe that. It isn't something they can understand very easily. So they will just keep trying to force their own agenda. And the only hope is actually that he will completely lose all rationality and do something so extraordinarily awful, i.e. try and abduct Henry or something, that they'll then be... Because Helen will have to get a restraining order or something on him if he's going to follow around doing things like that.
Well, it's going to be hard for him to not continually bump into her in a small village. You know, they're not living in Birmingham, are they?
Yesterday in the bloody court thing... So is that allowed that they both just go pottering, ambling around the courthouse by themselves after such an enormous case? You know, would Helen even be allowed to be on her own? She'd have to go and be sort of debriefed or something, wouldn't she? They try and keep the two parties apart.
You know what, Luce?
After the end of a manslaughter.
You would have thought so, but I don't know for a fact. This is Miss Mid-City's territory, I presume. I was disappointed last week in the testimony that Rob acquitted himself relatively well. Yes, he damned himself a few times with actually what he said, but he didn't blow himself up spectacularly in the way that some of us thought that he would, because we know he's got a terrible temper, and you just thought if you cross-examine him enough, he will just lose it. Yeah. And actually, he didn't. And what this does mean is that we do have this protracted after story. He could have done, what the script writers could have done is for him to blow himself up in the courtroom so that he walks out an absolute shell mentally, as well as his reputation being in tatters as it is now. And he'd have nowhere to go but back down to Hampshire with his folks.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't happen. And then we have this, you know, this kind of mawkish kind of, you know, the mawkish thing which he said to Helen kind of afterwards. And I must admit, I just kind of rolled my eyes. Enough. And I don't want to keep going backwards here, but let's be quite honest about the last week and the reasons for it. Ostensibly, the reasons we were told that last week happened, it was to highlight the issue of coercive control. 10 out of 10 for that. Not even 10 out of 10, 15 out of 10. Because there is no way that when that storyline was conceived, that all concerned had any idea of the massive impact it would have, not just in the not just on Radio 4 land, not just with the chattering classes, but within the UK and actually throughout the world. I repeat, I'm in California and I'm picking up US newspapers and they're talking about the Archers. Right, so put that now to one side. The BBC has a mission statement to inform and to educate, etc., etc. Now, move the stabbing to one side. Looking at that evidence in the court, yes, we as the listeners know, and we're privy to all of Rob's horrendous, disgusting, despicable, venal behaviour. But if you take 12 jurors true. It was relatively finely balanced, and it had to be for this, for the way that the outlaid the drama. If you're going to have an hour-long drama based on the verdict and the jurors, you needed to have it finely balanced. And I would argue that if you are encouraging women victims to come forward because they've been domestically abused by their partners, by their spouses, you don't serve that cause well. In, you serve the cause of drama well, but not actually highlighting that case and cause, that case and that cause. The evidence in court should have been overwhelming against the shit. And let's, and one of the problems with our jury system is its great strength, is that actually this comes down to you as a human being, as a citizen, actually weighing up your life experience with the evidence. Now, if there hadn't been the super duper liberal slightly old, Helen would have gone down.
Quite simply.
So again, I repeat, if you look at the cause, not the drama, right? If I was a woman and I'm and I were caught in a situation like Helen, I would say it's a toin cost. It's a coin toss. Why couldn't I say that? And I absolutely believe to hell with the plotted drama. Obviously, Mr. O'Connor wanted to have his Citizen Kane moment of radio drama to do 12 Angry Men, and I'm mixing up cities, you know, two classic American movies, but people understand what I'm saying. And he's gone out with a massive bang, right? The other thing I would say about the drama is that if you plot 12 Angry Men, you absolutely understand the motivations of the various male jurors. Just like you said, Lucy, you know, within the show yesterday. So everybody has their distinct personalities, and there is the one character who just wants to go back to the ball game, you know, just want to get out of there as quick as possible, etc., etc. And everybody then reaches into their past to actually understand their initial prejudice, which is exactly what happened here. But with 12 Angry Men, you have it all played out. So when Henry Fonda is that one juror who hangs out and says, no, we need to we need to deliberate this properly before we send this boy down to, you know, X amount of years in jail. You go through it and it's, you know, it's one against 11. Then you whittle them all the way down, and then they swing back at one point, etc., etc. If you're going to absolutely copy this classic Hollywood movie, We didn't have that as a conclusion, did we? It was just cut off.
Yeah.
We don't know why Nigel Havers and Graham Seed et al. Switched. We have absolutely no idea.
No.
And I felt robbed
by
that.
I don't care. I'm just glad they did.
But as a lover of film, media, and the plotting of drama, I actually felt, robbed by that. Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if you're going to so follow this kind of classic film and the nuances of it, then you need to go through with it. I'm just presuming that there was so much material that it was kind of left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
But you did feel like, wait on a minute.
Well, that's what, you know, we were doing this filming yesterday. When the result came in, we all went, hey, Ray, what? Because it was kind of... You know, there was a cheer and then a really, and then we carried on cheering because we just thought, oh, sod it, good, hurrah, who cares, sort of thing. Afterwards, everyone was thinking, so what do you think happened then? Why did they suddenly abruptly change?
And if you again, this was an hour long special, but this is Radio 4, where the schedule couldn't be just thrown up in the air at a drop of a hat. So if it needed another half an hour, give it another half an hour. You know, you've built this thing up for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
Why snip away 15 minutes unless the writing wasn't quite up to it or something or another. But considering the masterful job that has been done portraying this whole thing for the last 2.5 years, I'm sure Sean O'Connor had the plotting cojones for him to do this. And he has, you know, various excellent writers actually to flesh this out. So why they didn't give it another 15 minutes, half an hour, yeah, heaven only knows. But anyway, yeah, where are we, Lucy?
Completely lost. Jojo Sexy Heels.
Hi there, Dumpty Dummers. It's Jojo Sexy Heels here. I'm sure everybody's been saying what they thought about the actual trial. As you know, I'm a long, long time fan of Graham Seed. I just loved his out-of-character rendition of Dennis the Slaughterman. Welcome back. Please, can we have more Slaughterman storylines, maybe with Eddie down at the market, just so that the lovely Graham could be heard back on The Archers again. I found it a very hard episode to listen to this last week. I've been away for a couple of weeks on holiday. I'm still a week behind on Dumpty Dum. Just caught up with The Archers yesterday morning. Love the show, as always, but oh my goodness, it was a lump in the throat time. I really thought Helen was going to go down. So happy days ahead, and I suspect that Titchy Knob's going to be an absolute bastard. Poor Henry, I think it's going to be taken out on him. We'll wait to see. Anyway.
Jojo Sexy Heels was really, really enjoyed hearing Nigel again.
He didn't really cover his tracks too much, did he?
But you know what? God love him. He was interviewed earlier in the day and he said, well, I had to completely change my voice, obviously. He said I had to sound a lot rougher than normal. And I thought, really? Nigel, I sound rougher than that, to be honest, Graham. But anyway.
I can't remember if it's when we had the dinner with him or whether it was me.
All the people to play a slaughter man. I think Nigel.
Listen, it was a lovely move.
It was way at the back.
Mm. It was a lovely move of Sean O'Connor to get him to come back. And you saw in the press that he said it, you know, he really wanted to work with him, etc. He stood out like a, I was going to say like a sore thumb, like a pleasant plum. You know, he's like, oh, he's back.
A plumpy thumb.
Yes.
Nigel's back. Yeah. Talking of Nigels, now we have New York Nigel.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Royfield and Lucy and everyone. New York Nigel here after a rather long hiatus because of summer weddings and summer holidays. I just caught up with The Archers, but I've saved up your podcast for listening to a bit later this week as a consolation. Well, what a relief. I thought that they rather over-egged the pudding during the last month or so with Robert DeMara and Helen's lawyer taking to the bottle and Prissy Shuler's meltdown and Jess refusing to testify and Rob sounding more and more like Satan every time he was heard. And I have to say that I was starting to feel totally played on in a way that strained credulity. And if it was possible for the scriptwriters to jerk our chain, they never missed an opportunity. But still, the hour-long episode I thought was a bit of a mixed bag. At certain points, it was like listening to one of those period piece reality radio documentaries from the 70s, especially when everything descended into that unintelligible shouting match. But when the actual Archer's characters were heard, the writing was really superb and really, really moving, I thought. And I think we listen to the programme because we love the characters. And when those actors' salaries are given to people we don't even know, in the interest of informing the grand listening public about the judicial system, we feel like we're not really listening to the Archers somehow. Anyway, given the many loose and nasty ends that Rob has left dangling all over the village, my one hope now is that he and his dreadful mother and father are going to descend into a protracted and gradual ignominy and shame that will take just as realistically long as it took Helen to be portrayed as a survivor of domestic abuse. They gave us a larger-than-life baddie over the last few years, and his end has to be a larger-than-life end. Otherwise, there's no balance, I don't think, to the drama. I don't want him just to melt into thin air like the phantasmagorical Root B. That's all for now.
He wants an ignominious end for Robert. Yes, I can. The only way I can see us getting shot of the man is for him to actually be pushed. There is a horrible, horrible, awful, horrible story in the headlines today, which I won't go into because nobody needs to hear it because it's just so unpleasant. But it's about a father trying to punish his wife using his child. And I thought that is the way that this is going to go.
Oh, hells. Can you tell us what this story is?
It's a story that highlights a mess up by social services in that the child protection agency accidentally sent a woman was in a safe house with her child because the husband was violent, and they accidentally sent him the address of the safe house, and he went there and the little girl answered the door and he shot her through the head.
Oh God.
And I thought that, and he did it because he said he thought he was going to lose custody. And so he decided if he couldn't have her, nobody would. And that's narcissistic personality disorder right there. Psychotic, you know. And then he went on to, as far as I know, kill himself as well. But it's that level of delusional sense of megalomania that you are in control of things to such an extent that you control life and death, and actually you are capable of making life and death decisions that other people aren't, and that kind of thing. That's where I think the storyline is going to end up. I don't think we're going to have, you know, we're not going to be listening to a 30-year battle over who goes to Henry's parents' evening. I can't, you know, that's, I can't see that happening. Now, Annie Brown,
uh-huh,
who was on the BBC Breakfast News this morning, uh-huh, and went and came with us to the recording last night, to listening last night, she looked it up for us because we were all getting muddled about who actually owns Blossom Hill, and it's Usha.
What?
Usha, when she Googled it, it said, because Rob is renting, Rob and Jess moved into Blossom Hill at first, didn't they?
Yes.
And then Jess went, Helen moved in, and Usha owns Blossom Hill, and Usha's renting it to Rob.
Okay, I got completely confused. What did Peggy bequeath to Helen?
Lodge where Peggy lives. I think that's where everyone's getting muddled.
Okay. All right, that makes sense.
So will Usha, because if I was Usha, I'd chuck him out. But then you don't want to upset Henry, do you? Where's Henry supposed to go?
True that.
Mm. Mm. Then she said, who gets custody of Henry? And I thought, let's not talk about custard. Anyway, Claire Howard is next.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Claire from Hertfordshire. Just ringing in. I'm going to make it super quick because I know how many people you're going to have calling in. I am so ecstatically happy about the verdict. And thank God that is now over. I don't think I could have coped had Helen gone to prison or been found guilty. I did think that she was going to get found guilty of wounding with intent and then maybe given a suspended sentence due to the mitigating factors of rape, etc., etc. So now I guess we know why it's going to go on for a bit longer, because we're now going to have the problem with Rob and getting rid of him. I really hope he now faces charges for rape and coercive control. I hope they find Stefan and find out all his other dastardly deeds, and most importantly get the children off him. This is going to be quite horrific again, I think, for the next little while, but hopefully we've broken the back of the worst of it.
Wounding with intent, she thought. Suspended sentence. That, I think, would probably have been slightly more realistic than this. Yes, you're completely off the hook. Well done. Ta-ra. But she said, better than I hoped for. Yes, I know. It was lovelily awesome, if a bit far-fetched that all this would happen. But I'm just glad. And I feel that the tension now feels to have dissipated, because although obviously I would prefer it if Rob was backed over slowly by a tipper truck, I think it's the fact that now it's all out in the open and we don't know any more than anyone else does. Nobody's got any illusions anymore about Rob, and he can't carry on conning people anymore. That's what I feel relieved about. Everybody knows now that he's a shit, and that's great.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. I'll tell you the one voice which we didn't get at all last week, which would have added quite
Susan.
A lot.
Susan!
No, not Susan. We're going to have Susan in spades this week, moving on. Ursula.
Yes!
It would have been really interesting to hear Helen's testimony and Jess's and her reaction to
it. Yeah.
You know,
well, I'm sure she's a lie back and think of England woman, isn't she? You know, men have needs, dear. You just have to, you know.
But considering that we got Bruce and his bellicoseness, right? And we know that he's been brutalizing his wife emotionally, physically for, you know, half a century and more. It would have been interesting to have the other side from Ursula.
Yeah, I agree. But I guess that's all to come, isn't it?
Don't know, Luce.
You're all depressed now, aren't you?
No, it's not that I'm depressed. I just, we've been served up with great writing, great drama, and there's the fanboy in me, which is the Archers fan, which is like, oh, that was brilliant. Then there is the person that loves media and how these things are plotted and kind of put together, and the two bits of my brain are somewhat slightly in conflict here, and I'm just seeing there were missed opportunities if you're going to go down this road, because the writers, let's forget the writers, Sean O'Connor dictated some months ago that we needed to understand Rob's domestic situation to see where he ended up. Not to excuse him, but just so you understood. Because why the hell did we have Bruce and Ursula come into this thing in any meaningful way? So if you're going to do that, continue to do it.
Yeah.
If you're going to have his father in the courtroom spouting, well, then
you're right. And also, because didn't Ursula say... Rob said that Ursula had always really liked Jess.
Exactly.
So would she not now be horrified to hear that her husband had been... that her son had been raping her?
Absolutely. It's just... I couldn't write this thing. Trust me, you know, I couldn't write this thing. As you know, Lucy, I'm a functioning dyslexic, right? I couldn't plot this thing. But the were beats which were missed. You know, if you're going to look at abused women, we all know that Ursula is an abused woman. Just they'd missed a trick in just having her say two or three lines, even if it's just the odd gasp.
Yeah.
How could you say that about my Robert? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Would have spoke volumes.
Hang on. Was she in the courtroom? Or was she at home looking after Henry?
You know what? That's a fair point. but. And actually, Bruce did say at some point, didn't he? That he, you know what? It's a fair point. And Bruce did actually say to Shula at one point that that's where she was. But still... Right? But still, no. My point fundamentally remains, because when the testimony of Helen came out, that was one Tuesday. Wouldn't they have then trotted back home at one point and said, you know, Mum, you won't believe what she said?
Yeah.
Yes, Ursula was not in the courtroom, point taken. But still, she could have been an integral part of understanding an abused woman of some 50, 60 years worth of standing over an abused woman of some 2.5 years worth of standing as well.
Yes. Right, next. Yokel Bear.
Hello, Dumb Stomach. Yokel Bear here, calling from Yokelshire, where there are celebrations in the street because justice has been done. Helen is free. And oh my, what a roller coaster. What a journey it's been. The hour-long special, how nerve-wracking was that? I was in bits. I was in bits before the end of the opening music. And God, I felt so many different emotions at different times during it. It was, I got to say, it was awesome. But one thing really struck me tonight, and it struck me a lot, is how much of a community there is around the Archers. And I think one thing that's been important during this story, as important as kind of the awareness and the money being raised, is that there's this fantastic community of Archers listeners. And I know a lot of people, you know, from what I've seen on Twitter and Facebook and what have you, people that are part of that community have been through what Helen's been through. And I think if nothing else, this community that we're part of, this awesome community of Archers listeners, I think we all supported each other. And I'd like to think that just by being on Twitter and interacting with each other and talking to each other, we've really kind of helped as well. But also as well, I don't know any other docudrama that has a community like this around it. And I'm just really proud to be part of it. And I'm really happy to know all of you that are part of this community. Maybe I'm just getting a bit emotional. Maybe I need to go and pour myself a glass of wine. I don't know. Woo! Goodbye!
I don't need to add anything to that, but the bit I especially loved about Yoko Bear's call was the little woo that he did. It's very, very sweet. And I've been doing that every now and again when I remember today, just going woo! Auntie Jean! Two different calls this is. Stop clicking, Royfield! That we need to stick together.
Hello, Auntie Jean here again. It's Thursday evening. It's about 6:15 and I'm just ringing in to do a prediction. It will be not guilty on Sunday. That's how I feel it is going. And I'm keeping everything crossed, which is making walking difficult, but there you go. Shenanigans with the tweeting juror was just to so that we could have a Thursday stroke Friday night cliffhanger, and to be honest wasn't needed at all, but there you go. That was all I wanted to say, really, just a quick prediction so you can all say how brilliant I am when it all comes true. And a very quick shout out again, anybody who wants to come on Thursday the 15th of December around at lunchtime in London to a lunch. There's about 5 or 6 of us going at the moment, but you are welcome. I'm at JeanR61 on the Twitters. Please, as soon as you can, let me know, because I'm going to have to book a table pretty soon, it being near Christmas. Thank you. Speak to you soon. Bye. Hello, Auntie Jean here. I'm just ringing up to gloat, really, because I predicted this. So we've got Not Guilty on both counts. She's at home. We've got to look forward to Rob battling to get Jack, and Helen battling to get Henry. But who cares, because for the moment, it's okay. Thank the Lord. Hurrah, hurrah, hurrah.
Auntie Jean felt that the cliffhanger with the tweeting juror was massively unnecessary. So did I. I thought that was absolutely stupid.
Right. Now, I don't feel like I've taken my normal energy and kind of brio into this episode, Luce, because I feel there are weighty things for me to pontificate on. Right.
Could you speed up with the pontificating? Because I've got to get the dinner on.
Now, considering all the weighty issues of last week, yes, this is absolutely a drama. And they just slapped it in our face that actually they're paying really this thing for ratings. You wanted the plot twist, and whether it's a nod and a wink to us on social media, which it probably was, don't do it in a ham-fisted, I would say somewhat tacky way of doing it at the end of the episode.
And then say, we might have to run the whole trial again. And we're all like, oh, piss off. No, we're not. You know, don't be dumb.
If you're going to do that, do it in the middle of the episode and then resolve it. And then, yes, it's a nice little nod and wink to everybody on social media who's tweeting. Don't do it as some third-rate, hackneyed cliffhanger, which is some 1930s serial, you know, like
and then
Flash
they woke
Gordon.
Up and it was all a dream. Yes.
You know, anyway.
Nosilla, this is...
Hi, Dumpty Dum, it's Nosilla here. I haven't phoned in for an awfully long time, mainly because everybody else says what I want to say in a much more concise and appropriate form than I can. But I just felt that I had to phone in this week to say congratulations to everybody on the brilliant acting on the whole, with the exception of Pat sometimes, on this week's episodes of The Archers. Just when you thought that Rob couldn't impact on you anymore and you couldn't hate him any more than you do, he comes out with something else that just makes you want to murder him all over again. And he only has to open his mouth these days, and I've had enough. I also wanted to say congratulations to Louisa Petikas. Her portrayal of Helen this week has been heartbreaking in many respects, as I'm sure lots of other people will have said. Each time she's admitted, I've listened three times now to the episode where she admitted, she admits the rapes, and that's rapes plural, my heart breaks for her. And I'm not ashamed to say that I've cried every single time that I've heard that. Not just for Helen, but because that is the reality for all the real-life Helens that are out there. And I think, in a way, that's why this storyline has been really important. It's about the real Helens. And I think that brings me on to my second point, which is that I am feeling increasingly manipulated at the moment. I haven't listened to the hour-long Sunday episode yet, but it will do soon. And I have a horrible sneaking suspicion that that is going to take things on to an appeal for Helen. I've had enough. I want this storyline to come to an end. And that's not because I'm naive and because I just like happy endings, although I might happen to. I just feel that I need now, we all now need a return to the old Archers, the Flower and Produce show, the single wicket, and the ridiculous lead up that we have to every single Christmas panto. As I've said before, I think this storyline has been incredibly important, and I think they've done it very, very well. But I've had enough now. I want my old Archers back. If I want gritty drama on a long-term basis, I can turn on my TV set and watch one of the TV soaps. That's not why I listen to the Archers. And I'm nostalgic for my old Archers now, and I want it back. Anyway, let's see what happens after tonight. My love to everybody out in Dumpty Dumland, all the Archers listeners, and let's hope that things turn out the way that they should.
She says the acting was brilliant. I agree. I thought the jury acting was shocking. I thought that the acting of Rob and particularly Helen was bloody amazing.
And again, we have to say this because I know Timothy Watson gets all the plaudits, but Louisa, she's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and if you are listening, you are amazing.
Yeah.
And,
like you hear the exhaustion in, mind you, she's probably been recording this for so long, she probably was genuinely exhausted, but you could the exhaustion in her voice when she was being cross-questioned. And she would sort of go, yes, no! It's, you know, it's sort of that slightly tearful, slightly, oh, just leave me alone thing. I thought she was great. Really, really good.
I wonder whether when Sean O'Connor came into writing, plotting The Archers, editing The Archers, whether he initially had this storyline up his sleeve, and whether it was working with Louisa and he realised what an amazing actress she actually is, and then the complexity of her backstory, which kind of led him to do this. Because we know that when Rob, the character of Rob, was written into this, they didn't have this in mind. They just realised he was such an amazing actor.
Yeah.
You know, and it kind of developed from there. So I wonder if a similar thing hasn't actually happened with her, because she absolutely is amazing. She is amazing.
Hi, it's Miss Wood City. I've been listening to the trial, and as you might imagine, there are things that displeased me greatly. And I'll try and keep this brief and try and limit myself to no more than 2 minutes. I can set out my main concerns as follows. Firstly, the advocates were appalling. They lost control of their witnesses and asked leading questions which would not be allowed. I was not at all surprised that we had a surprise witness. And we had a surprise revelation on the witness stand from Helen. I wasn't even surprised that there was a risk to the trial continuing because of the actions of a foolish juror. All of this made for absolutely scintillating drama. I can't deny it, but it was utter nonsense. And it's just rubbish. Most of my other concerns I set out on the forum. I'm quite happy to answer people's questions in writing, even though it's taken a lot of time and this is not what I do. I'm not a criminal advocate, but I've chatted to one or two people and they say that this is obviously very good drama, but procedurally so wrong. I don't need to give this any more thought. It's just stupid, but it's entertaining stupidness and I'm going to stick with it.
Miss Mid-City says it's procedurally all wrong. I know, but you know what? It went on long enough, even being procedurally all wrong. How much longer would it have been if it had been procedurally all right? But anyway, but thank you very much, Miss Mid-City. She's answering everybody's legal questions on the forum. Mm. So people are saying, so how come so what?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
This is happening then. How come if he says that, what happens then? What does that mean? And she's been on there for ages answering it. So thank you very much, Miss Mid-City. That's very kind of you. Now, what we haven't talked about, but Jackie does. Jackie, the Nordic walk trainer. She walks in a Nordic fashion.
Hello, Lucy Royfield and Dumpty Dummers around the world. This is Jackie from Wimbledon via Yorkshire. I am a first-time caller in Inara. And I guess my Archer's vintage is Ruth, because I started listening sometime shortly before David and Ruth got married. I can't remember any other characters who came in around that time, so I guess I'm a Ruth, sadly. I'm on the Twitters as Stride Outdoors. That relates directly to my job. I'm a Nordic walking instructor, which I can't think would be very relevant in Ambridge, but I'm sure I could lead some lovely Nordic walks around the countryside of Borsetshire. Anyway, there's lots to be said about the trial this week, which I think has been fantastic, really gripping. And I came down this morning to see my husband listening to the omnibus, the entire omnibus. He normally comes out in an allergic reaction when he hears the theme tune, so that was amazing. Anyway, the bit I want to pick up on is Ian and how devastating it must have been to him to hear the stuff about Adam come out in court. He wouldn't have been expecting it, is my guess. Nobody else mentioned it during the week, which I guess is fair enough because there was lots of other stuff going on. But I think the consequences are just going to be seismic for Adam and Ian. And my plot prediction is that Charlie will return from Scotland to take over the job that Rob thought he was going to get, because Justin can't possibly employ Rob after all the stuff that's come out this week. And that Adam will end up with Charlie, and sadly I think Ian will leave Ambridge, which I think is a real shame, but that's my plot prediction. I am just about within my 2 minutes. Bye.
Ian. Devastated to have heard the stuff about Adam coming out in court, just delivered sort of straight down the line, unemotionally. She predicts Charlie will come back, Rob will be fired, Charlie will go off with Adam, Ian will leave. I think Charlie's got to come back. I don't think we've seen the last of him. I think, and I cannot see that Justin is going to continue with this job offer to Rob when Rob's been accused of rape by two separate women.
You wouldn't have thought so, would you?
I mean, he'll think he will still carry on. I mean, as far as he's concerned, he'll just say, well, she got off on some sort of, she just lied to the jury, got off on some technicality, turned on the waterworks. But, you know, it's just my misfortune to have hooked up with two hysterical women. You know what they're like. Fortunately, it won't be like that with my next one, i.e. Charlotte.
Well, we do know that there are too many loose threads in terms of storylines. Yeah. And if Rob is going to be, if we take the fact that he is Gideon Jack's father to one side and Henry's custody battle to, you know, also put that to one side, there's the various goings on at when he was working underneath Charlie, there's the culvert, there's the, you know, the this, the that. There's probably about four other things of which he's been a shit and a bastard and just shafted people about, of which need to come out in the wash.
Absolutely. Witherspoon.
Greetings, Lucy, Royfield, Millie Bell, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. It's Saturday afternoon, and I can't call her in tomorrow after the Archer special broadcast because we'll be on the road. I'm sure many of you will be delaying your reactions until then, so I'll share my thoughts of the past week pre-verdict. First, a major clap of both hands to the scriptwriters. It was a gripping week and far exceeded my expectations for how it could all be portrayed. First, I was a bit frustrated by Rob's initial testimony, but then I got into the rhythm of the trial. Highlights? Helen's moment of remembering and revealing the rape stood atop, but also Jess's emotional testimony, Ian publicly being confronted with Adam's infidelity by an ambivalent prosecutor, Shula's strange and uncomfortable appearance, Bruce's bizarre outburst, and the family's reactions, especially when Johnny, the new beating heart of the clan, joined them. I didn't like so much the gallery talking over the testimony. We were all collectively yelling at them to shut up. My only disappointment, much to my surprise, was how quickly it all went and the sense that we missed important testimony. But I guess it's difficult to distill 6 hours into 13 minutes. I would also like to give a major shout-out to the community of listeners, and especially those who participated in the post-show tweet-alongs after each episode. I had made sure to clear my schedule to listen live daily, and it was great to share my immediate reactions with so many Dumpty Dummers. What will be the outcome? As I tweeted earlier today, won't at least a few jurors be moved and convinced by Helen and Jess's testimony and stand firm for acquittal? Will I be in tears listening to this Dumpty Dum, or be celebrating with you all? I certainly hope for the latter. So next week, we'll be talking to you from Provincetown, Massachusetts, where Angus, handsome husband, and I will be for 2 weeks while our kitchen at home is gutted and renovated. One final question. Should we buy a new knife set?
He thought it went quickly this week. I got very, very muddled. It was a bit like the gap between Christmas and New Year. I didn't know which day I was on at all. I kept thinking, hang on, are we still there? Is this the next day? Has Pat, where's Pat? Is Pat gone back yet? What's going on? So I completely lost track of which day, how long the trial went on for in total. Was it supposed to be over the course of a week or was it like a few days?
I've no idea, to be honest with you. Absolutely no idea. You'd have thought a trial of this magnitude is going to be more than a couple of days. You'd have thought.
But I suppose, I mean, yeah. But, you know, was it, they took 2.5 hours to decide. Over 2.5 hours, but just over 2.5 hours to the jury, didn't they, to decide?
I'm wildly speculating. I don't know. I've never stepped foot in a courthouse in my life. Never done.
I take longer than that to choose slippers. The idea that
you have more than one pair of slippers.
No, I only have one, but it's a very special purchase when I do make them.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It is Sarah Brown here. I think you're going to get millions of calls after 8 o'clock on Sunday evening. So I'm calling you now at 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, which is our kind of, you know, rest day, isn't it, from the Archers, to say how excited I am about it and how I'm planning to be in the kitchen listening from 7 till 8 tomorrow evening and shushing cats, husbands, children, anybody else who happens to turn up will be sent out of the room forcibly, if necessary. I do think it is terribly exciting. I think the idea of a stellar cast of jurors is really rather brilliant. And I do think, let's just consider how we might return to the safe place we've all been in for the last, in my case, 50-odd years of listening, where we talked about cows and set aside when that was around and milk yields and stuff. How do we go back to that rather sort of bucolic, cosy atmosphere? Do you know, I think we can, because really, do we not all know that the stuff of life is the everyday domestic toil, occasionally highlighting some really rather darker sides of human nature? I think we'll get there. So anyway, I might call you depending on how passionate and ignored I am here at 8 o'clock tomorrow evening, but otherwise I shall leave it to others to give us their responses. I've absolutely adored making chums with people on Twitter and with you about the Archers. I just have a feeling that there's a whole crowd of us all linking across the nation in support of you and of the stories. I do love it. Okay.
Sarah Brown says, how are we going to go back to cows and set aside after this?
With great happiness and joy in our hearts, hopefully. And can I just say, whenever this woman calls in, I can just listen to her voice 24/7. Why don't you call in more often?
Because she's too busy shushing everybody. Like she said, she has to tell the dog, the cat to shush, and her husband to shush, and the children to shush, and she needs some time. That's what's missing, you see.
Good morning, Dumpty Dum. It's Steve here. Hope you're all well. Just taking the Dumpty dog for a walk. Her name's Ruby, but I call her the shit machine. A couple of things. Been quite a harrowing week. There's two things really that are pressing in my mind. One is the total meltdown of Pat. She's normally a very strong character, but she's totally gone to pieces throughout this whole ordeal. When she was in her militant feminist phase, I'm sure she would have been on demos and would have had advice on how to deal with the police. But that went straight out of the window due at the start of this things when she basically became a prosecution witness by going to the police and offering evidence. On Friday's episode, she had a total meltdown, and it's been a chump of a husband being the strong one. It just seems a bit out of character, but I can understand how people feel in that situation, I think. The second bit is some of Throb's evidence. I'm sure some of your eagle-eyed or eagle-eared listeners would have picked this up. When he was giving evidence, he was discussing Jess, and he made a very telling phrase called, "We took precautions." Now, I took that to mean that while he was with Helen, he was still sleeping, or perhaps raping Jess still, and I'm surprised that Toboggan didn't pick it up. But anyway, I await the verdict. I haven't got to Sunday's episode yet. That's all from me. See you all. Bye-bye. Mwah. Love you. Bye-bye.
Steve. Bye-bye. Steve says, Pat. Pat would have known how to deal with the police because she's been on loads of marches and, you know, she's against the man, isn't she? But I think it's different when it's your own child. And I think you just go to pieces. And she just didn't, because she was so surprised. If you've just trashed a GM crop, you are fairly certain that the police are going to come and knock on your door and go, "Oi, you know that crop, was that you?" And you go, "Yes, Ossifer." That's fine. But when something just absolutely appears out of the clear blue sky, like it did to the, you know, to Pat when she stabbed Rob, then you could see why Pat would have just completely panicked and not dealt with it at all well and not remembered, and she lost completely that feeling of defensiveness and sort of attack that she used to have, and she just sort of kept crumpled completely. But then, you know, hopefully none of us will ever be in that position to find out what it feels like. But yeah, I do have some sympathy with her.
And completely. You know, this is your child who, you know, his life is kind of on the line, as opposed to you defending yourself and your rights, etc. And it, you know, it's completely understandable that, you know, you your emotions come to the fore first, as opposed to your kind of logical, kind of rational brain, you know. And I thought it was really heartwarming. And I know there's one person on Twitter that thought that it was wrong, but, you know, Tony said, "Oh, you are my little girl, you know, you're back, I'm going to look after you."
I lost it then completely.
But there was somebody on Twitter says, you know, "No, she's a woman and she's a strong woman." It's like,
oh, for God's sake.
No, exactly. When she will always be his little girl. Yeah, and that's nothing, you know, let's take the patriarchy and misogyny to one side. This is just pure human emotion.
He'd have said it about
emotion.
Tom. He'd have said
exactly. He would have said my little boy. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Lady Garth Goff. She's had it with Shula. Well, do you know what? I think Shula being Shula is punishment enough, really. Shula has to live with Shula all the time.
You know, Lucy, can I just say, just in the way that I think Sean O'Connor has been in love with the character of Helen and has developed and taken the strands of her being, whatever, you know, some people might say emotionally a little bit brittle, whatever, just whatever. And you so masterfully said that she's a modern woman who actually has ideas of perfection and she can't obtain them, and the anxiety around that. I forget exactly how you said this some podcast ago, but you really summed up really, really well. I think Sean O'Connor just hates Shula.
Yeah.
You know, the meat paste, you know, the sackcloth and ashes around the hunt stuff. And I've got to say, Mr. O'Connor, you've played a blinder with this. And though I didn't quite believe that a family member of hers that would be up for attempted murder, that she would sit down next to the father of, you know, of Rob Titchener. I didn't quite believe that, but still. You know, even that she's done wrong as well. You know, and she wraps herself up in this sanctimonious kind of cloth of Christianity as well. So Sean O'Connor, just like every other artist listener, you hate Shula Hebden Lloyd too. So well done to you, sir.
And Goddess Diva's lovely call, which really made me laugh.
At last, our Helen. Home. Hello, Dumpty Dummers. It's Goddess Diva here, overjoyed and over the moon at the verdict tonight. They're a proper sweaty adrenaline mess and about to have strawberry trifle for dinner because I can't do solid food. Thank you. Wanted to also say thank you to everybody who has held everybody's hands. I say this all the time, but it's never been more important than tonight. Everybody was holding hands, everybody was being supportive. The Dumpty Dum and the Archers family did their thing again. As far as the case is now concerned, now the thing has got to be on getting Henry home and making sure that Helen doesn't fall prey to Rob's advances. That was just the creepiest thing ever. I still can't take my eyes off you. Well, you can take them off her if I turn up and stab them with a knife so you can't see. Then maybe I'll chop your hands off, and then maybe I'll chop your feet off, and then maybe I'll make you eat your own dick. And no, I don't think any of that's over the top. I think I'm being quite restrained for me. Anywho, the right thing happened. The right verdict was reached. And totally shipping Jackie with Carol Toboggan. That's all I'm saying. I think, like, them two in the house together, I'm just thinking they could feed weed to Jenny Darling and Jill, and they could have mad sapphic angst over who was using the Zimmer frame next. Right, all right, I love you loads. I'm going to go eat my trifle and calm down a bit, I think. Love you loads, loads and loads and loads, everybody. Dumpty Dum family. Oh, and well done, Paul Truman, £150,000. You cannot believe how fucking over the moon I am. For all of us who were Helens, for all of us who are Helens, for all of us who were ever in danger of being Helens or could be future Helens, thank everybody because you're all just brilliant. Righto, God is deeper out. Bye.
She's overtired and overexcited. And eating trifle.
Yay.
Goddess Diva has been a stalwart throughout this this storyline. I think it's affected her incredibly deeply, and she's really sort of been good at rallying the troops and noticing other people who aren't coping with it very well and all that. And it's just been, as Yoko Bear said and Goddess Diva said and Sarah Brown said, it's kind of, we have all sort of, we've all sort of helped each other limp through this, I think, and that's made it all bearable. So thank you very much, everybody.
Also, can I just say to the goddess, thank you for your little tweet about the show which I put out with the rape crisis counselor. And you know, she put hashtag survivor. As I kind of said in my intro, I did that show obviously to serve the purposes of trying to understand the devastation that can be wrought upon women through rape, but also for somebody who's very close to me, also who's also a survivor also. So thank you for that, goddess. Thank you for saying that you enjoyed the show.
Hi, it's Rachel Louise here at Tani Ray Ray on Twitter, calling in after listening to the excellent short additional Dumpty Dum around rape. In my work, I work with teenagers and children who engage in harmful sexual behaviour, and teenagers who are at risk of sexual exploitation. And something that is very clear to me when it comes to rape culture is that we have very fixed views in the UK about what rape is. It isn't something that happens within a relationship. It is something that happens violently by a stranger in a dark alley, for example. And we've got very confused ideas about what consent is, very poor idea about what consent is. I also do some work with adults and parents of children. And only on Wednesday did I have to sort of explain to a woman that what had been happening within her intimate relationship, previous intimate relationship, was rape, because no wasn't an option. We need to make it clear that consent, it can only be freely given. If saying no isn't okay, it's rape. It's really important that we push for sex and relationship education in school. This is the beginning of how we can start to address our rape culture.
Good afternoon, Lucy, Royfield, and all Dumpty Dummers out there in Archer's Land. This is Andrew White calling from Portland, Maine. Been a while since I've called in. A White PWM on the Twitters. I just listened to this special episode regarding statistics on domestic violence and rape, and what a wonderful public service message that was. Thanks so much for doing that. On to more prosaic things. I wanted to submit a name for a possible consideration for the Honorable John Archer. That is my husband, John, who is a John Deegan. And third, if I've understood the rules of the game correctly, I believe I'm a Charlie Thomas in terms of my archersness. That is the character that was getting a lot of play when I first started listening. Thanks for all you do. What a wonderful opportunity to listen and to be part of this community. And take care.
Hello there. This is a first-time caller and actual first-time listener. I didn't even know that your podcast existed until earlier this morning, and now I've listened to about three of them. So I've listened to about 6 hours of and you're both very dynamic and beautiful people. I'm a gardener. I work with two dogs. I work with Monty and Rosie, and I can't say they're very, you know, I don't know, enamored by your voices, your tones, but I certainly am. So well done. I'm a huge, huge Archers fan. As I work on my own in South London gardening, I have only my own little world. So I literally, I don't know any other Archers fans except for maybe Bex in Brighton. And whenever we get together, we talk exactly how you guys talk. So it's very strange. So yeah, when I first started listening to the Archers, I guess my thing would have been Elizabeth, I think, had recently lost Nigel, and her son, oh God, I've forgotten his name now, was acting up. But then I think when I really started to get interested was when Rob first appeared. There's probably a billion other things I need to talk about.
Now we have an email. We have two emails, actually. We have Olivia, who said, "It's all over. Helen is returning to her rightful home, surrounded by those who love her for who she is. I am relieved, went through a whole range of emotions, anger at the jurors, proper tears at the verdict, fear and hatred when Tichinob came on, and sheer elation when Helen fought back and then returned to her true home." She said she spent most of the trial going, "Who's that voice?" But she was trying to focus on making dinner while she was listening. That turned out all right. But when Custard Gate happened, she had to scrape porridge out of the microwave. And she said she can't. Because she used to keep swearing at the omnibus when it was on Sunday, she'd play it in the evenings and she swore at it. But now her little boy is on the cusp of talking, so she's had to stop listening to it because she can't now swear in front of him in case he then repeats it back again. Mm. And she is, the what character do you associate with sort of thing. Yes. She's an Iftikhar.
Ooh.
And she said Lizzie should really stop declining all these eligible bachelors. She hasn't declined Richard Locke, has she?
No, nah, she just said...
She said, put it on the back burner for the 10 minutes and then try me again. Yeah. So, yeah.
She just says, just calm your jets for a little bit. Yeah, absolutely.
And we've got a lovely bit of modern poetry here from Jake Smallwood. I love this. No, this really made me laugh. It's quite... John Hegley, I don't know who it is. It's his pre-trial poem.
Mm-hmm.
"Here is my poem pre-trial, trying to make my beloved understand, who does not listen to the archers, why I might be a bit upset about a mythical place. Tuna casserole, it's called. Mm-hmm. "I have deceived you, my love. Our story is only one of many that I cannot tell you about. They are the twisted and beautiful tales. I cannot even make you catch up. It is called The Archers, and tonight I will be lost to you. For 1 hour, but it may be a bit longer if she goes down. Now I think I understand why men get cross at football teams losing." That is what I felt like last night. I thought, this is what people feel like when their favourite player goes, or they don't score at the vital moment, or England loses, or any of those things I don't care about. This is what it felt like, the tension of, are they actually going to do it? And I thought, this is what it feels like to be a sport person, I thought.
True. By the way, Birmingham City are fourth in the Championship right now, Lucy.
Who? Is that good?
That's very good. Considering, I think we're technically bankrupt and we don't really buy any players, and we've just been a selling club for about the last 4 years since we got relegated. Gary Rowett is an absolute genius. Absolute genius. Can I just quickly say,
yes,
that I think it was last Wednesday, I had the most enjoyable beer or three with a very thirsty Dumdy Dum listener who goes by the name of Robert Wilson, who tweeted me.
Naked Fingers, he is, isn't
he? Exactly. Now, he's a very interesting gentleman. He's a skeptic, and he listens to all these skeptic podcasts. But anyway, he tweeted me, and he did tweet me, but he did it in a very clever way. He said, "I'm in San Francisco. I wonder if I'll bump into Royfield whilst I'm wandering around." So of course I went, "Oh, hello. Okay, let's arrange a bumping in." So we had about 4 quick jars in a pub just off Market Street. I think we thoroughly enjoyed each other's company. He said so many lovely things about you, Lucy, and about just the fact that listening to a podcast can be an intensely personal experience, and that he thought we were his friends, because aww, we're with him, aww, we travel yeah with him when he's doing yeah various things, and we've been his constant companions, as well as other podcasts that he listens to as well. And that he enjoyed our company. And he said to me, we sat down at this bar, and he says, "Royfield, this feels somewhat lopsided. I know loads about you, you don't know anything about me." And I hadn't thought about it. I thought, oh, yeah, you do, actually, don't you? You know. But anyway, Robert, he's off to Yosemite. He's probably there right now listening to us in his earbuds. He's going to Chicago to see some friends, and then he's kind of travelling around to Yosemite and other bits and pieces. So, Robert, let's catch up and have a drink again soon. Shall we have a little bit of Millie Bell now?
Why not?
Good day, everyone. I'm going to give you a very quick roundup, a very brief roundup this week, because it's gone absolutely ballistic on both sides with us all having so much to discuss about the trial. Lady Garthgarth started a discussion on our forums about lack of sleep. Maldi Rose is talking about timeline. Ibn Battuta, the trial. Catherine Jago says that Witherspoon was right. And Julie Harvey says, foofing, yes, go Ian. And I guess the difference between the forums and Facebook page is that the forums tend to be ongoing. Facebook is short and sweet. On Facebook, we started by discussing, by asking just, and this was on the Tuesday, I think, what the thoughts on the trial thus far were. And what was really interesting was that the people who responded were less commenting on the trial so much as the whispering, and I must admit that drove me crazy. I'm not sure in our courts in Australia whether you would be allowed to whisper so much. You're expected to be quiet and be respectful of the process, but I mean, I guess this was poetic license. Janice Pope said she wasn't happy with all the whispering. For one, it's annoying. I know I'm not missing anything, but I feel like I am. If I was the judge, I would be having a stern word. Also, I know the defence side are distressed, but we are British and it's not polite. Stop it now. Mark Everton said, I know I'm going to hell for saying this, but even amongst the high drama of the trial and all the emotions, Henry still annoyed the tits off me. I'm sorry to hear about your lost tits, Mark Everton. We also discussed when the rape was mentioned and the fact that we could all stop holding our breath now. Rachel Louise said, oh God, it was hard listening. Excellent acting, excellent writing. I cried and a large part of that was relief, as it now feels like she might not face prison. Rachel also pointed out that Witherspoon called this undumpty-dum. Julianne Parker said, hubby and I were sat in the car outside friend's house to hear it all. Had I been at home, think I would have cried, but I didn't. Then went in the friend's house, she then told me she met Anna Toboggan all but briefly down on the casualty set. She was meeting her partner, who is in said drama. Joe Jackson was crying in the kitchen. I was so moved. I don't want the kids listening to the omnibus. I think it's too upsetting. Many more in that vein. The rape really did affect a lot of people, didn't it? And I think it was just kind of a relief because we knew and they didn't. We also asked, I was a bit surprised when Pat ran into Ursula in the same waiting room, and I wasn't sure what the protocol was on that. I thought it seemed very unkind and at the very least thoughtless. Cormac's Patil pointed out to me that they're not opposing witnesses officially to both prosecution, which of course I'd forgotten. It was just a sort of delicious oversight that happens all the time. Diane Telford said, I assumed it wasn't one of the waiting rooms as they keep people apart. I had an escort when I was a witness in court. The support was good from the court support service. They were making sure us witnesses didn't discuss the case. However, they are both prosecution witnesses. And I must admit, I think in our courts, especially for major trials, I think the Salvation Army provide a support service, so you usually do have someone with you. So I agree that it seemed a bit unlikely that they would just be there on their own and no one caring, I guess. So anyway, lots more in the vein that it was, they were actually both for the prosecution, which has skipped my mind, I apologise. Royfield put up a fantastic remix of the beginning of the trial. If you haven't had a chance to listen to it, you really must go. It's very, very clever. And we have that on the Dumpty Dum Facebook page. And we also asked, after the tweeting, if one of the fabulous legal experts could let us know what the options are. And that was me being really greedy because I didn't want to wait till the next day. Anthony Ogden said, my head is throbbing with this development. This case falls apart because of the juror's actions. It seems possible that the testimony so far may result in a criminal case against Rob. I do teach legal studies in Australia, and I'm very confident that as it played out is what would have happened here too. But I'm also very confident that the offending juror would be done for contempt of court, and quite right too. That was just appalling.
I also think it's highly unlikely that anybody would have said something so blatantly defamatory and got caught so quickly, but hey, that's just me.
Could we do tweets of the week now?
Yes, please.
Jojo Sexy Heels. Bruce prayed he'd seen the last of Jess. She's living a mile down the road, you short-sighted bigot. I thought that. Why the bloody hell would she carry on living somewhere next to a man who repeatedly raped her? The parents of a man, you know, who was you know, and then he said, oh, I thought I'd see the last of her. And literally, as Jojo says, she's living a mile away. Anyway, you know when they stopped the trial because of the tweeting?
Yes.
Hinge Zandl said, it also appears another of the jurors has phoned in to Dumpty Dum. That would talk about the fourth wall. That would have gone through the fourth wall, turned around, then smashed it with a mallet. Now, I really like this one. Thomas Grant.
Mm-hmm.
Before the Archers tonight, the last time the nation crowded round the wireless in such a unanimity... Oh, I knew I wouldn't be able to say that. Before the Archers tonight, the last time the nation crowded round the wireless in such a unanimity of loathing was listening to Lord Haw Haw. Full bloody marks for getting the phrase unanimity of loathing into a tweet. Then that we were moaning about the irritating all the whispering and muttering and strange noises from the spectators gallery, whatever it's called. And Chris W said, oh, it was Peggy. She dozed off and thought she was at the Felpersham Playhouse. And the last tweet of the week is, appropriately enough...
What do you mean, Goddess, the last tweet of the week?
Are we putting this...
Oh, okay, good. Got me confused for a second.
Sorry. Tweet of the week is, appropriately, Goddess Diva, who, when the tweet was read out about Helen being a man-hating lezzer, she said, "Ooh, man-hating lezzers is the name of my punk band." And we have an add-on tweet of the sort of week, which is, you know, we're trying to separate people out into whether they're a iftikhar or whatever when they came in. And B12 Simon said, "I'm relatively recent. I'm a digester."
I did see that. I thought that was quite funny.
I don't think you should refer to yourself as a digester. It's deeply, deeply unpleasant. Anyway, so that's it. That's it. I can go make dinner now.
Cool, so we've done that, and then we'll just cut in Millie Bell. And then I'm going to say something like this. This week, folks, you have been sending through pictures of your pooches, your moggies, and even your dumdy diddlers onto us on the Twitters. And I'm going to give you a roll call of all the dumdy dogs, dumdy mogs, and the dumdy diddler next week. Very obviously, can't do it this week because this show is long enough anyway. But if you've nominated your pooch, your pet, as a dumdy thingy, you will get your moment on the podcasting sun next week. Thank you very much, please.
And thank you all as well for trying your hardest to get into the 2 minutes. I know we picked a really, really bad week to try and do this, but it worked really well. So thank you very, very much. And thank you for trying it and embracing it enthusiastically.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, can we start to wrap this one up then, Freeman?
Yes.
Right. And I've lost my script. Because you know what I was doing? It only says I've been clicking.
Yeah.
And I was clicking. It's because Cosmo sent an email saying that the Russians have been at it again with the website.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, there were loads.
Someone suggested it was coded messages from Matt trying to get in touch with Pussycat.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. But anyway, let me... Oh, God, your script's gone for a proper Burton. I really had clicked off. Talk amongst yourselves. I don't think we've done too badly, all things considered.
Yeah. But my dinner's burning, so let's chop chop.
Dumdydum.com, folks. We're not quite there yet, but Laura Jackson's on it She sent me through, Lucy, the most detailed kind of spreadsheet with points of things she wants to change. She wants clarification on what is the reason for this, what's the reason for that. So dumdydum.com, bear with it, folks. You are weeks away from seeing it honed and, you know, fighting fit in terms of being a website for purpose. But it does have a shop on it. And actually, another listener has actually said that they have a friend who's very good on the old graphics and would like to help us to laden our mugs, t-shirts, socks, knickers, whatever, with dumdydum/archers.
We don't have dumdydum knickers, do we?
Oh, everything's on there, Lucy. Everything's really? On there. Yeah. Do you need a new pair of drawers?
I do.
Really?
I was looking at it today on the John Lewis website, yes.
Really?
Mm.
There's part of me wants to explore this with you more. There's another part of me says, let's just move on.
Yeah.
Right. So iTunes reviews.
Bring my knickers.
Not again, I'm not. No. iTunes reviews, folks. Thank you to the people that have started, that have been putting on reviews for us recently. Again, I'm not going to do the roll call this week, but we'll do it next week. But yes, new reviews on the Tunes of I have been coming through. Now, also, there's been a few new Patreon donators. So thank you to you again. Next week will be the time when you get your moment in the podcasting sun. But if you'd like to keep our little show on the road, there are two ways this can be done. You can either hit the donate button or
you can go to patreon.com, search for Dumpty Dum and donate $2 a show, which is about £1 something.
Remember, to get in contact, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on our website, which is dumptydum.com. We can call us on 0203-031-3105, as somebody just has whilst we're recording the show. But Buster, you're too late. I'll give a quick listen. If we can throw it in without actually responding to it, I will. So you never know, you might have actually just squeezed in. On social media, specifically the Twitters, you can find us where we're at dumdydum. Me, I'm at Royfield. Harriet is at Shambridges.
Sarah Smith is at Sarah_Smith. And I am at Lucy V. Freeman. And we're going to
No. On the Book of Face, which is the bit which we never actually put in here, you can find us by typing in dumdydum. And we are getting loads of new like a lurkers on the Book of Face. So thank you for that.
And now we're going to end with a very important message from Maeve in the Big Press. So before Maeve, we'll say goodbye. Thank you for listening and thank you for all your support over the last traumatic 2 years, and hurrah for Helen.
Oh, and just before we absolutely do go to Maeve, BBC publicity.
Yeah.
We love the Archers, and you know that we do.
Yeah. Right. Can we put that song on?
What? Oh, the Beyonce one? Yeah, of course we can. Now, but there was another Beyonce. I'm a Survivor. That's what we want. I'm a Survivor. That's the Beyonce one song we want on.
Okay, but that's a bit flippant.
Is
but
it? This,
yeah, a little bit, but the freedom is kind of...
Oh, okay.
It's about... Like, well, I don't... No, either.
Because I thought that Survivor one, it's a bit like all the single ladies. It's all like all your new feminists are all like, oh, Beyonce is a strong woman and yada, yada, yada.
No, Survivor was Destiny's Child.
Oh, well, anyway, it's still Beyonce singing it, though.
Yeah.
So what you're saying then?
You do. I don't mind. You do.
I think, considering we've said we've had Goddess Diva going Survivor.
Yeah. Okay.
Have you just outdone me when it comes to a reference about kind of popular music?
2 years. One strike in 2 years.
All right. Well done, Freeman. So, anything which we Destiny's Child, well done. What year was it then?
I don't know. Do I only know because it's on my iTunes thing. I've got to go and do the dinner.
2001.
There we go.
Love you a lot. See you later.
And you take care.
Bye bye.
Hello, Lucy. Hello, Royfield. Hello, everybody. I just wanted to say very quickly that whatever the outcome of the trial, it's really important that we continue to fund organisations to help people escaping from domestic abuse and from coercive control. If every one of us, and there are up to 5 million listeners of the Archers, if even, you know, 10% of that set up a standing order every month, £5 or £2 a pound to go to either the refuge charity or an organisation called the Freedom Programme or anywhere locally, charities that help and organisations that help families in your area to fund domestic abuse support, anything from advice lines through to legal advice, through to housing advice, through to even roles like my own, which is therapeutic family work. It's really, really, really important. So, you know, in years down the line, what we don't want to do is lose the momentum. It's been amazing how much money has been collected by Refuge from the Just Giving page. Fantastic. But, you know, in 5 years' time, what we want to be really able to do is say the real legacy of this storyline is X amount of therapeutic workers or helplines or even charities just managing to hang on by the fingertips and saving families and saving lives, because the work that Refuge do and the Freedom Programme, etc., they actually save people's lives. We can't underestimate that. So let Helen's legacy be, whatever the verdict is, you know, funded and good funding towards domestic abuse.
Sweetheart, don't worry, it'll all be okay.
Here we go.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, this case is about a wife stabbing her husband in the kitchen of their family home in the presence of her 5-year-old
Count
child.
One is attempted murder.
Bruce Titchener can parade himself in front of the cameras as much as he likes, Tom. That's not why we're here. Not why we're here.
Free Helen.
Free Helen.
Free Helen.
Free Helen.
Free Helen.
Free Helen.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, this case is about a wife stabbing her husband in the kitchen of their family home in the presence of her 5-year-old child.
Free Helen.
Free Helen.
This was an act of self-defense.
It's going to be over soon.
With your honour's leave, I'll call the first witness, Mr. Robert Titchener.
I swear by Almighty God that the evidence I shall give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And nothing but the truth.
It's going to be over soon.
Next thing I knew, I felt a sharp pain in my side. I turned back around and saw Helen holding the kitchen knife.
Was that so very wrong?
Why, Helen? All I ever did was love you. Was that so very wrong?
They were fighting. Daddy tried to grab a topper, but he fell down.
All right.
Mummy said he was sleeping, but it isn't very nice sleeping on the floor.
Helen was waiting for me at the door. She was shaking and there was blood on her hands. I asked her where Rob was and she told me he was in the kitchen. I went to look and Rob was on the floor.
It's going to be over soon.
When I came back to Ambridge, I hardly recognised her. She'd always adored her work, but Rob made her give it up. And the saddest part is she still loved him. Even when she decided to leave, she said she just needed some space. He'd attacked her.
Your Honour.
Look at him, sitting there, shaking his head. Well, I'm telling you, Rob Titchener is the worst kind of abuser because he doesn't leave any bruises. He lies and he bullies and he manipulates. He tried to destroy my best friend and he's still doing it.
Any more outbursts, you'll be held in contempt.
I've said what I came here to say.
Rob told me what I could eat.
How I was going to have my baby.
Rob picked up the kitchen knife and forced it into my hand. He said there was only one way I could leave, and that was by killing myself.
Free Helen.
Free Helen.
It's going to be over soon.
Did you call a domestic violence helpline only 10 days before the evening in question?
Yes, I did.
Mrs. Titchener, what did you discuss?
I'm sorry?
Something that you'd struggle to tell anyone else, even your friend Kirsty Miller. Mrs. Titchener, I know how unfair this must seem. Why did you ring the helpline?
Rob, he was determined to have a baby. I told him I wasn't ready. The first time he plied me with wine, he held me down by my wrists.
I won't warn the public again.
I told myself he was my husband. It should be fine. But it wasn't fine, was it? Mum, Dad, I'm so sorry. Rob raped me. And not just once. It happened over and over again.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Free Helen.
Helen, sweetheart. Don't worry. It'll all be okay.